telling people. The problem is teens and young adults. From ages 15 to 19, the fertility rate is down 7%, and it's down 70% over the last two decades, meaning we're telling people that are young not to have babies. The problem is teens and young.
Okay, why would you do that age grouping? 15 to 19? That's an interesting bracket of ages.
Well, good morning, everybody. And let me say a couple of notes of appreciation. First of all, to the Prime Minister of Pakistan and to Field Marshal Munir, who were both incredible hosts. And whatever shortcomings of the negotiation, it wasn't because of the Pakistanis, who did an amazing job and really tried to help us and the Iranians bridge the gap and get to a deal. We've been at it now for 21 hours. And we've had a number of substantive discussions with the Iranians. That's the good news. The bad news is that we have not reached an agreement. And I think that's bad news for Iran much more than it's bad news for the United States of America. So we go back to the United States having not come to an agreement.
What did you tweet out then? What was the tweet? What were the emails? What were the messages? What were the statements? Why would you make these statements with nothing? So we're just, sorry. This is why I said before, why I didn't want to like go over these 10 points or even read out. Because I knew this. None of this is real. It's fucking retarded. There's nothing. None of this was ever going to be followed. It's crazy. This is a crazy set of things to follow.
Right. Very clear what our red lines are, what things we're willing to accommodate them on, and what things we're not willing to accommodate them on. And
so now, here's a question. For all of the dick sucks like Will Chamberlain and all these other dick sucking, crazy dick riding, dick harvesting, cum swallowing, fucking spineless, cowardly, jelly backbone motherfucking conservatives who are all saying that Trump was a god for negotiating this fucking deal, what are they going to say now that none of this was actually negotiated? Now are they immediately going to switch sides? Say, oh, actually, this is... God. Whatever. Sorry.
You made that as clear as we possibly could, and they have chosen not to accept our terms. Questions?
Sir, Nick Robertson from CNN. Precisely what have they rejected here? Can you help us understand it a little bit?
Well, I won't go into all the details because I don't want to negotiate in public after we negotiated for 21 hours in private. But the simple fact...
That's really crazy because you had no problem posting all the points and all the other bullshit before. You had no problem with so many social media posts and all this other shit. But now you think... But now you don't want to go over... But the negotiations were about? Okay, cool, Chief. Okay.
Is that we need to see an affirmative commitment that they will not seek a nuclear weapon and they will not seek the tools that would enable them to quickly achieve a nuclear weapon. That is the core goal of the President of the United States, and that's what we've tried to achieve through these negotiations. Again, their nuclear program, such as it is, the enrichment facilities that they had before, they've been destroyed. But the simple question is, do we see a fundamental commitment of will for the Iranians not to develop a nuclear weapon, not just now, not just 2 years from now, but for the long term? We haven't seen that yet. We hope that we will.
Was there a framework on anything? And also, did the Iranian frozen assets come up? And did you reach any conclusions on those frozen assets?
We talked about all those issues, Jen, and we talked about a number of issues beyond that. And so certainly those things came up. But again, we just could not get to a situation where the Iranians were willing to accept our terms. I think that we were quite flexible. We were quite accommodating. The president told us, you need to come here in good faith and make your best effort to get a deal. We did that. And unfortunately, we weren't able to make any headway. Preston.
Mr. Vice President, how often did you communicate with President Trump throughout the negotiations? There were reports that there were multiple rounds where there were breaks in between negotiations. How often did you communicate with the president throughout those rounds? And what was he saying as you were going through these negotiations that you said fell short?
Yeah, obviously, we were talking to the president consistently. I don't know how many times we talked to him, a half dozen times, a dozen times over the past 21 hours. We obviously also talked to Admiral Cooper, to Pete, to Marco, to the entire national security team. We talked to Scott Bessent a number of times. So look, we were constantly in communication with the team because we were negotiating in good faith. And we leave here with a very simple proposal, a method of understanding that is our final and best offer. We'll see if the Iranians accept it. Thank you.
On the UN thing, so you said that you don't think that, to be clear, just to put my stakes down, with Zelensky's comment, I just thought it was interesting. There was a perspective of it where, like you said, that guy was arguing something, basically saying he was equating them, and then he was that whole argument. Well, I'm interesting, basically. In my opinion, the idea that Iran shouldn't be able to lock down the strait is a lot more iffy than it's just like a binary yes or no. And I'm wondering if your take on that was just purely because of the IRGC's like terrorism and they're like all the bad shit they do. Would your take be different if like Iran wasn't bad and like the aggressors in this situation, like Israel and US, were actually the worst? Does that make sense?
No, I think even if they had a just cause for war, I don't think I would agree. This is where my brain goes immediately. Let's imagine instead that it's a giant dam or something. If it was a thing like that and they said like, we're not going to operate this anymore, then I think maybe I would say, well, fuck it. Maybe they're at war. Could they say we're not operating this anymore? Maybe, sure. But in terms of like bombing or attacking ships passing through, I'm not sure ever if I would agree with that. Or rather, like if they want to, fine. But I would say that that would be a cause for war for every other country on the planet then. I'm trying to think of like how America, isn't that basically how we were pulled into World War One? Was it U-boats, German U-boats attacking and sinking?
Yeah, that was the first thing I thought about as well. Like when the Allied nations were attacking the boats that all stuff that were going to like Japan and Nazi Germany, and the same way they also attacked ours, right? So like the idea that like we're not at total war, well, no, the US is not at total war in Israel with Iran, but Iran is at total war with them. So how does that kind of dynamic play out? Well, like, yes, you could argue, and I think it is true, Iran bombing every ship that comes into the strait. But at the same time, the Gulf states that are hosting the American stations that are allowing the US to fire at Iran are getting more money from the what's, you know, going through the traffic, right? So, and that's kind of, you know, one of the reasons why they were bombing the Gulf states, I think, along with just causing chaos to, like...
Sure. I don't think they should be able to do it, but, like, I understand it. If I was part of the Iranian regime, I would probably be committed to this. One of the big issues is it's hard for me, because usually when we're thinking about rules of war, the rules are kind of followed by both sides and everything. But right now, like you said, like Iran is, this is like a regime change war for Iran. So I don't even know what the fuck incentive they would have in order to do anything. Since it's a full on regime change war, like I can understand why Iran would be like, fuck this, we're shutting it down. But you're not, like, these are wars you're not really supposed to be engaged in. Like, or you understand, you know, like if you're engaged in these wars, you're not going to get anything from the other side, right?
The things I had that, like, with that guy earlier came in that I think were interesting was the aspect that, like, everyone was approaching this, and I obviously, you know, from Shah's perspective, the very lefty binary kind of view. What was, like, curious on your side, though, is that, like, for me, the Zelensky tweet implicitly, okay, so from my understanding of how shipping works and all that stuff, Zelensky's tweet, by necessity, implies that the UN, i.e. everyone else, should put pressure onto Iran, whether through kinetic means or economic means, or go into a coalition to secure the strait. The problem is with those kind of things is, like, and the problem I have with it is, like, it is necessitating that other countries get involved in Trump's and Iran's war in some way. It doesn't mean that, for example, they have to attack Iran, but they have to support his war in some way.
I mean, I don't necessarily know if I would say that that has to be the case. I mean, like I understand that you could say that, like, a lot of the actions the UN Security Council would take maybe would have to go down that road. But, like, imagine the rest of the world, bro. Every single time the US is up to some bullshit in the Middle East, like, everybody gets fucked for it. It was the Houthis that were shutting down access to the Suez Canal. Now it's Iran that's shutting down global energy markets to the Strait, through the Strait of Hormuz. Like, it's like every time some shit's going on, it's like, what the fuck is the, one of the primary missions of, really, I mean, the United States and the UN broadly should be, like, to guarantee, like, these are basic things that we don't normally talk about, like shipping lanes. Like, you should be able to ship products.
I know, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I can understand the frustration. And then this is ignoring all the added context of, like, Iran and Russia and the shipping drones and all that bullshit. Yeah.
I'm just saying that, like, okay, so maybe I wasn't specific. What I'm saying is that, like, the way in which that they would open this lane, for example, would be, like, making, so the only way ships going to go back through that strait is if the war ends and there is no more kinetic stuff going on at all, or Iran isn't threatening ships, or so the war ends, all that stops, right? But even if you had a scenario where the whole UN came together and basically said, yo, if you don't stop this, wait, we're going to destroy you, like, not destroy you, like, kinetically, but economically, we're never going to work for you again. That wouldn't, like, if the war was still going on, or there was still being drones shot, like, terminals in the Gulf states, there wouldn't be shipping there. Like, there is a, it's a binary kind of situation where, like, if a war is going on, or there's a risk of war, no ships are going to go in the strait. Maybe they will leave, there's no ships are going to go in it to get, like, stuff and come back out, because it's not worth the risk.
Well, so, I mean, like, if there was a guarantee that there wouldn't be attacks, or if there wasn't a history of attacks in these shipping lanes, I think it might look a little bit different, but...
It wouldn't be anywhere near as, like, the same. It would still cause massive harm onto the rest of the world, like, pretty much the same amount. Because even if you have 30-50% of the throughput, you've still got all of the demand destruction from the deleted supply of the other 50% that's going to have to flow through. Like, sure, it's going to be less pain, but it's still going to be a monumental amount of pain.
I mean, you can show me a shipping manifest or whatever, or all the cargo ships, but my guess is going to be that the Houthis in the ships through the Suez Canal is not just been the same exact change based on nothing. It's probably been when there's more military activity from the Houthis bombing ships, it probably dramatically drops. And then when they get bombed or they stop, it probably goes up. But I doubt it's just a straight line the same the entire time or barely changed, you know?
Okay, so I can show you a fucking chart if you want. But
yeah,
like
show me the fucking chart.
Sorry, that wasn't meant to come off in a like that kind of way.
Yeah, that was mine, bitch. Just kidding, sorry. Still good.
Okay, so the Houthi attack on the strait, you can see it when it happened, right? Mm-hmm. The Houthis have not attacked anything since, I think it was like 2025. Maybe, or 2024, when the missiles stop flying, and there's not going to be any change in this for a while. Like, it's changed recently because of the war in the Gulf, ships have had to, so Saudi has had to reroute their supplies that usually go for the Persian Gulf to the Red Sea. So there's more going through that pipeline. So there will be more ships going through the Bandar now, but like, this is meant to be basically me proving to you that it doesn't matter even if there is no more shit going on, just the possibility of it happening is going to make ships not want to go there.
Okay. Well, I guess so. Then never mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. So I would say that from the perspective of the person that was saying earlier, like, I would agree somewhat with the idea that Zelensky is putting this kind of onus onto the world.
Or sure. Do you think, I feel like, I'll slightly change my position. I feel like if there wasn't a history of bombing ships, I don't know if it would be the same. So like, my guess is going to be, I could be wrong, but in November of 2023 or December of 2023, was this the first time we saw the Houthis attack? Because there's been a civil war going on there for a long time. But if the first time they attacked was in 2023, I guess I could agree with you after that. Once they've shown a proclivity towards doing it, then nobody's going to go through while there's active war. But if they hadn't had, if there was no history of that happening so commonly, do you think that it would still be the same?
No, the biggest necessity for basically stopping or removing kind of transits is a direct kind of closeness to that lane of traffic, and also the government or the prevailing like military in that area saying that you cannot come through here. Once that kind of happens, then insurance, just the general thing has to change, right? So like one thing that Chow was asking me, I think it was Doombug, was saying like, okay, what would happen if like, for example, Iran, or I was saying actually, Tim, like if Iran never attacked any of the ships and they said, we're not going to attack any of the ships in this war, like we're going to let any of them come through, the transit through the strait would still be incredibly low because they are right next to the strait. They are like, it's like a couple miles off, and they are firing like drones and ballistic missiles at the Gulf terminals and stuff. No one would want to risk being stuck in the Gulf because potentially at any point the Iranian kind of government might say the strait is closed right now, or they might never do that, but it's just the idea of that kind of the risk is not worth it for them.
Okay,
I just wanted to clear up that kind of thing because I think it's a misunderstanding a lot of people have of like the overall just shipping, and it's also in the media a lot now, and people having to like think about these things. But it's a pretty complicated industry, and it's not as simple as like, you know, the coalitions of like the Western world can just say, "Hey, we're safe," and they'll be like, "Oh, okay, cool."
Sure.
Yeah.
I still like, sympathize with Zelensky's frustration though, because then that does, if everything that you're saying is true, which I think demonstrated a good argument for it, then that kind of furthers the argument that like the UN is just basically fucking worthless if they can't even do something like guarantee free passage of ships for global shipping stuff.
I think, well, this is a pretty unique example because it is literally just a one way. There is no other way to the Hormuz Strait. But like at the same time, I'm not trying to come off as like, I'm not trying to come off as like Zelensky is like,
well, is this really a unique thing? Because I feel like we went through this with the Suez a few times with Israel and Egypt as well, where Egypt is just like,
Suez, you can just go around. Like you can go Cape of Good, right?
Like, yeah, you can, but it's like, this is like, isn't this like 2 weeks extra of time? But yeah, I'm just saying that like the UN is not able, it doesn't seem like the UN is able to compel other nations to allow like free shipping or like free passages.
It's,
just, yeah.
It's really hard because like when you have choke points like this, because I said the power of the nation that's controlling it is so diametrically just over the UN. Like they just do not have that kind of...
Sure, it would be hard to think of how they could enforce that without some like a crazy like a UN
nuke plot or something. If you're really thinking about this from someone like a conglomerate, like a lot of the, like when the ceasefire came out, right? Uh-huh. A lot of the companies, like the shipping companies like Maersk and then Lloyd's, were like basically saying, like, this is not changing our perspective on the shit. Like, we're not telling any of our people to go to like to the Strait, because these people aren't like, they're not assessing it on like a, like, it's similar to like the Pakistan thing, right? Like the, like when Trump gives an ultimatum for like ultimate destruction, it's like similar to the Pakistan that they now have to completely stop this. They can like throw Iran under the bus, like in negotiations or like between them or anything. They have to make sure this doesn't happen. And it's similar for the ship. It's like they have to, it's not their job to like, to keep things flowing if there's like a good enough price. It's their job to keep like their ships, their fleet existing. That's way above anything else, right? So from their perspective, it's not about whether like, oh, maybe it's safe enough. It's like, is it safe or is it not? It's binary, right? Sure. If it's not, then we're not going through.
Sure.
From Zelensky's POV, I would say that he has every right to say this though, but people defending him, I think, are kind of retarded, because from his perspective, Iran, who has been funding the war against Ukraine, has been doing this, and then they have now started war that's going to immensely affect them because they get loads of their oil from there. It's going to affect them in loads of other ways as well, negatively, and Europe, which is affecting them, funding them. So obviously, I'm not trying to say that Zelensky shouldn't be able to say this. Like, I don't think so. I just think from a high-level perspective of like strategic shit, it doesn't make any sense to agree that we should call on the UN to go behind America and Israel's war on this and pressure Iran. If it means negotiations happening, I think that would be good, but like pushing for the strait to open, I think is not, because that just, it's just sunk cost fallacy. Like if you like keep open, or are they going to contest you, then like, yeah, you did that, you're like, yeah.
Okay.
Is there anything else? No, I don't think so. Right. No, thank you.
Be careful.
The filibuster.
Mm-hmm.
I think getting rid of it would actually be good, and people might soy out on this because not that hard of a take, but do you think it would make Republicans slash Democrats have to vote their minds more versus just
on party lines all the time?
Being able to hide behind party lines? Yeah.
Maybe. It's hard to say.
Okay.
I kind of agree with the filibuster. I actually think it's an okay thing to have conceptually. Like, ideally, you would want a little bit more consensus in the Senate before you start passing, like, huge pieces of legislation. I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. But the only issue is that the Republican Party is just so fractured on everything, and they're or not fractured, but I should say so polarized against fucking everything that it is impossible to do anything right now in Congress. You have a Republican Congress. To repeat the arguments I give over and over again about how irritated I get when people are like, oh, we need new laws to prevent these things from happening, everything else. Like, the laws to stop Trump are all in place right now. The Republican side of Congress has decided that they have abdicated all responsibility to their job. They do not want to do anything. They don't work anymore. So, I mean, like, what do you do at that point? Yeah.
I just think it'd be nice to have, I don't know, maybe play a little bit more politics in like the way of like, if there's a bill that
like what Biden was doing,
pass,
like he was good at talking to individual senators, like what should happen in an ideal world. And I understand there's going to be some politicking involved, but in an ideal world, what would happen is a new bill is up called the Corn Farmer Subsidy Bill. You look at your district, or if you're a senator, you look at your state and you decide, will this bill benefit my state or not? And then you make decisions based on there. If you think it will and you want to vote for it. If the other party brought it up, then you go to your whip, you go to your majority leader, your minority leader in the Senate, you tell him, listen, I think I need to vote for this bill. I know I'm going to break step with you guys, but like, here are some concessions maybe that you or I could ask for this bill. And like, this is how it should go. But now it's like a straight like RD. Got your Democrat bill? I don't vote for it. Or that's Republican bill? I'm going to tell you about that. And that's it.
But it would be also nice because then like that Republican senator, for example, or the Democratic senator can like get some face with their audience of like, hey, look, I can go across the aisle. I can actually vote on XYZ if it's going to benefit us. I don't see...
Which is what they do. Really, but like the most cancerous, perverted way that this plays out is like there were people... Fuck, I wish I could remember the specific example of this. It might have been over the infrastructure bill where there were politicians that were fighting tooth and nail and then bragging about the accomplishments of like the Biden infrastructure bill.
They didn't vote for it.
They voted against it. Yes.
Yes.
And it's like...
evil. It's crazy.
So it's like, what the fuck are we doing here? It's retarded.
I think they were doing that with a lot of the infrastructure or the transportation bill, too. They were like, oh, look, we're bringing the fucking trains back, XYZ. Yeah. And they voted against it. It's fucking stupid. My favorite meme is the one where, like, Republicans somehow become really nuanced on every take when they're in office.
Uh-huh. You mean when Donald Trump got his his bachelor's in economics? And he's like, well, actually, inflation is a cumulative effect. And I never said I'd be able to bring it down because you can only change the rate of change of inflation. And at the end, it's like, oh, but you do know that. Okay, you fucking retard.
The funny thing is, it's usually the president doesn't like have huge ties to the oil price, but this time he actually it's a fucking 1-to-1.
Yeah.
He is the sole reason that oil prices are going high.
Yeah, and it's annoying to have to like explain because people will be like, you said the president isn't in charge of this. It's like, well, yeah, he's normally not, but like he doesn't normally do retarded shit like this. Or yeah, like you said that we could trust the DOJ and everything for Biden. Like, why are you saying no, you can't trust him? Well, because the president is acting.
Look who's in the DOJ?
In a completely different manner than he ever has historically, you know?
You know, they're using this gallon of gasoline, the cost of a gallon of gasoline like this is the end all and be all. And I just remember these stories about World War II and how the American people sacrificed a lot to win a war. I also remember the price of gasoline was pretty high under the prior administration. What do you make of that?
Yeah, all of the kinds of media that I consume, and they are making it. It seems that what's unprecedented, that there's kind of like an energy crisis, and that's just not true. I just tested that this morning. I gassed up my Jeep at Costco, and I effectively paid $3.80 for a gallon. And two years ago, it was $3.65 for a gallon. And I don't remember all the Democrats as a Democrat.
What? You don't remember that affordability and inflation was literally the number one fucking thing on the ballot? That it was the most important electoral? You forgot that? You don't remember that? What did this guy campaign on?
He has brain damage, dude.
True.
But as I am, we never described the energy kinds of crisis and things were out of control. So for me...
Problem? I mean, why is everybody so mad about gas? This is the first time it's ever happened. Surely this isn't a huge issue that always happens.
Jesus.
No way. I mean, what's this got to do with the price of eggs?
The reason people like clarity on this is because Shapiro embellished it in the first place, not because Kyle didn't do enough research. Was Kyle Kalinske tweeting that Shapiro was in the IDF or whatever? God, the Jew shit is so boring. Oh my God, kill me. Oh God, kill me. Love you, Hutch, but Shapiro did say he volunteered in the Israeli army. All else to the side, is it false to say that he was in the IDF? You have to realize when Pisco has either dug himself into an indefensible position or when he's being toxically autistic, you're just trying to summon all of the moral weight of a particular word, but you're still like missing the central point. Apparently, Shapiro volunteered to do some work with the, what was this? During high school, Shapiro spent 5 months studying volunteering in Israel with his classmates as part of a service project requirement, which they completed through a program that took them to a kibbutz in Israel, where he worked on a farm and had a fishery. The program also included service on an Israel Defense Forces base, an experience he described as being a past volunteer in the Israeli army, according to a spokesperson in 2024. People like Pisco and all these other weirdos want to say like he was in the IDF because what they're trying to make you think is he was murdering Palestinians. That's like the goal. He was in the IDF. He was raping and murdering Palestinian women. Like that's the normative weight that they're trying to summon. I'm asking in virtue of what is a volunteer in the Israeli army, not in the Israeli army. Are they definitionally in the IDF? Oftentimes when Pisco's throwing around the word definitionally, you know he's either being bad faith or not worth engaging with. It's so fucking retarded. Oh my God. Politico is reporting that two Democratic potential presidential candidates intervened to make sure the DNC resolution condemning dark money groups like AIPAC was defeated. Kamala Harris, did you reach out to the DNC to oppose the resolution? My God. You've got Lycan being a retard on the timeline. Was happy to get the commitment tonight that none of the money raised will go to anti-Ukraine candidates. And anyone opposing giving Ukraine the means to survive, this should be the standard. Those running for office must state clearly they won't join Trump in abandoning Ukraine. But Dylan, what if an anti-Ukraine Democrat gets the nomination? Will you still vote blue? Jesus. So you're looking to pick up fights with libs today. First, I saw you baiting Stacey. Then you went after Wick and Hutch. Now you want to mess around with Dylan. Bro, are you okay? The only people that the tankies will fight are the libs. Someday. Or maybe they won't. I don't know, actually. If Dems are too retarded to realize it, the party deserves to die, I think. I'm okay with it.
I'm okay with it now.
I will never understand why when someone fucking hates me, they don't just like hate me this much. They don't just like give up and move on to other shit.
Notice that no real people in the media say this. This is not like a real thing.
Why is this guy talking about my political takes? He must be obsessed with me.
Like, you're a political commentator, bro. What do you expect people to do? You're out there giving political commentary and acting like a fucking retard the exact same time. I mean, of course people are going to comment on it.
Why are you so obsessed with me? Just stop talking about my takes. Can I please just give my political takes without anybody talking about them, please?
Oh my God.
They go crazy for the rest of their lives. Like, it dramatically alters their trajectory where every waking moment is another opportunity to just be like, oh, I can get one off on them. Because you respond? No, even when I don't respond, I mean, I didn't respond for fucking months. Right? Like, you can't say that about most of my fucking haters, right?
This guy brings up the perceived hate complex against him constantly.
Once again, Bill Maher is like actually trafficking in right-wing ideals or right-wing ideology, reactionary ideology, and saying a bunch of heinous shit, which is precisely the reason
Bill Maher?
Why Elisa Slotkin doesn't have an issue with anything that he's saying. Because it's about where you want to expand the tent to. That much is clear. A lot of these people want to expand the tent to the right.
Actually said that there was a double standard. I talked with Hassan Piker this week, and he essentially said that there was a double standard on you going on Bill Maher's show versus his Twitch stream. Do you want to respond to that?
Well, first of all, I've never been invited on his stuff. And I've gone on Bill Maher a bunch of times. Look, I have said repeatedly, like, I got to call balls and strikes, whether it's anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, coming from the state that I come from. And so that's what I've tried to do as he's come into Michigan. And, you know, I think there are a ton of podcasts or, you know, invites that I've not taken. And every politician has to make their choice. They have to make a decision about what they're going to go on. So I've been on Bill Maher. I think this is my fourth.
If you're talking about Maher's recent Islamic cultures rant, how is it right wing to talk smack about Islamic societies, which are the rightest wing societies on earth right now? Well, for Hassan, remember, right-wing and left-wing are just, that's like the aesthetic, right? He's just illiberal. He'll adopt the progressive. Had a bad date with this girl, but at the end of the day, we're all human beings out here trying. We all should be more kind and accepting to one another. I'm home. I'm sorry I was a little awkward. LaMayo, I just take a little bit to open up. I hope you had fun. I enjoyed meeting you, and I hope you don't take it personal. Don't ever put that message, ever. Don't even bother wasting your time writing that. Oof. I cringe just reading that. You're literally telling somebody, I imagine, why you're not going to go out with them again. Of course they're going to take it personally. Why even say that? But okay. And I hope you don't take it personal. Didn't feel an attraction or connection, but you're a kind girl, and I know you'll find the right person for you at the right time. Holy shit. Wait, oh, never mind. This is a troll. This is a bait. Actually, I take back what I just said. This is a perfectly crafted bait message. I could tell you were taking some things to heart. I really think you should do some internal work to strengthen yourself there. Hell, I have flaws, and I'm working hard every day to improve my self-love and confidence. I'm always here for you, and I mean that shit because life is short. You'll always have a friend in me. Never ever feel alone, deadass. This is a perfect bait message. So we've got, I hope you don't take it personal after doing the most personally attacking, scathing criticism ever. Didn't feel an attraction or connection. He could have just said connection, but now he has to put attraction in there. Which the girl is going to read as like, oh, I'm fucking hideous. He thinks I'm actually hideous. You're a kind girl. Oh, so I'm an ugly fat fuck, but I have a good heart. I'm nice on the inside. And I know you'll find the right person for you at the right time. I need like a hyper specific jigsaw puzzle piece because I'm such a weirdo that's like out on the cusp of reality that I have to find like the exact right person. I could tell you were taking some things to heart. I really think you should do some internal work to strengthen yourself there. And now calling her lacking confidence and things, and now giving her things she needs to work on? Jesus. How do you decline a future date without making it so critical on the other person? You literally could have just said, hey, I had a really fun time last night. Unfortunately, I didn't really feel a special connection or anything. I wish you luck. Like, have fun. Good luck. And like, that's it. You're out. You're outie. So you should lie. If your impression of what I just said is a lie, then you will be a kissless virgin for the rest of your life. And everybody around you is probably better off for it, because you would be a horrendous addition to anybody's life. Go do some introspection. You need to do some internal work to strengthen yourself there. Okay? Good luck. Did she really take things to heart? Or were you passive aggressive? Because reading this paragraph, it seems like you're passive aggressive and low-key reflecting. Maybe you should do some internal work. There were certain things she was saying during the date, like, will there be a second date? There isn't going to be a second date, is there? You don't like me, do you? Ooh, Jesus. During the date, and she started crying at the end, I could tell she was struggling. Oh, Jesus. I don't know, man. Okay, never mind. Jesus Christ. My friend said that he wants to wait a few days before he messaged a girl he was actually pretty interested in after their first date. Is that a bad idea? I think playing texting games like that is fucking retarded, in my opinion. Those types of arbitrary rules can help if you're naturally, I guess, like too clingy a person and you need like a hard and fast rule to make yourself not come off as like super clingy. But especially if this is a girl you met off of Tinder or some shit and you're putting days between meeting them again, then they could meet somebody else. They could go out on another date. They might think that you don't like them, so they start to rewrite their time with you. Like, I don't know.